is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with my colleagues Joseph Umar, the Executive Director of Secure Free Society, and Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil. We begin in Mexico, and a surprise, we're told, from the Mexican authorities. The Reuters headline, Mexico's rulers scoop up opposition bastion ahead of presidency race, filling in some of that metaphor. Mexico's ruling party, called Morena, comfortably captured a major historic stronghold of the opposition in an election on Sunday within these last hours, consolidating President Andre Manuel López Obrador, AMLO's, hold on power ahead of the battle to succeed him next year. Joseph, I begin with you because Mexico not only is the dominant player in Central America, it is a border with the U.S. that's much in the news because of the migrants flowing and because of trade agreements and manufacturing agreements and reshoring agreements. This looks to be a surprise to Reuters. Is it a surprise to you that López Obrador is so popular and now consolidating his power? Good evening to you, Joseph.
Good evening, John. It's not surprising. AMLO is very popular still in Mexico, despite several setbacks in terms of governing the country. He's very populist, and he's, he has a very populist rhetoric. So these elections are turning out in his favor. One of the most important is the state of Mexico City. So Mexico has 32 states. It's a federal country. Morena, which is the political party of AMLO, already has control of about 25 or 26 of those 32. So it's the majority by overwhelming margin. And now the most, the largest and probably arguably the most influential state in the Mexican Federation is Mexico City. There's Mexico City, the city, and then there's Mexico City, the state. And the leading candidate for Morena was the former education minister under AMLO, and a former, congressional member. Her name is Delfina Gomez. And she seems to be the odds-on winner of the state of Mexico to be the next governor. And this was a huge win for him. And I think they're still, I don't know if the official result has come out yet, but she's already has a comfortable more than 10-point lead, according to the National Electoral Institute of Mexico. So this is a quite a move up for AMLO. I think he's pretty much controlling the country. And this heads into next year's presidential election, or because of the way the Mexican Constitution is written, he doesn't have the ability to run for re-election, but it positions his political party in a strong position so that they can nominate a candidate. We kind of know who they are. I mean, right now it's the leading contender would be the mayor of Mexico City, Claudia Sheinbaum. And then there's also talks of potentially his foreign minister, AMLO's foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, of also being a top candidate. But the bottom line here, John, is when it comes to Mexico, all the rising political leaders right now are coming from Morena, are coming from AMLO's political party. And this is something that I think that was not the case a year ago. AMLO has been popular since he was elected in 2018, but Morena was not necessarily that popular, but his popularity is now translating into the political party, which is concerning for those of us that are worried about his governing, because not only is AMLO and Morena not doing well in terms of their economic performance of the country, but they're close, and this is becoming more confirmed, ties to the transnational criminal organizations. He's also proposed, I think, a peace process with the cartels on the border, which obviously that's not going to work. His interference in the U.S. elections, he's calling on people, the residents of the state of Florida, or citizens, I should say, U.S. citizens of the state of Florida, not to vote for DeSantis. He's currently talking about using the Mexican consulates against the United States. So he's becoming very much more anti-American, not just in his rhetoric, but potentially in his actions as well. So this is a concerning development. But nonetheless, it is something that we have to acknowledge, that his popularity and of his political party, Morena, is growing throughout Mexico.
Ernesto, this success, how does this suit the understanding that you've given us these last weeks about the left-right divide throughout Latin America? Does this strengthen the left? Does this hesitate the extreme elements because AMLO is identified near the center? How do other philosophers in the other capitals regard this success?
Well, John, good evening. This is certainly good for the left-wing wave across the region. This is certainly good for Lula, certainly good for the attempt by Lula to normalize Maduro and all the left-wing dictatorships in the region. So, Mexico, I wouldn't venture to analyze Mexican politics. I mean, Brazilian is already very complicated, and Mexican politics is a notch upwards. But I do think that in regional terms, this can lead to a whole Latin American bloc that is much more distant from the United States, much more distant from the, let's say, the democratic bloc in the world, where we would belong, I think. We should belong there. Nowadays, Lula is trying to, and Maduro are trying to organize the South American bloc. But Mexico, of course, they're much more concerned with their relations with the U.S. Everything leads to a whole Latin American, anti-American bloc. What this could spell for democracy in the region, for the fight against organized crime, is a nightmare.
Let's go to more Central American concerns. This is Reuters several days past. Guatemalan court keeps presidential frontrunner Pineda off the ballot. We've touched on this story before, but it was again reiterated by the courts with just a month to go, less than that now, 3 weeks to go before Guatemalan voters will pick a new president. The country's top court ruled on to leave the frontrunner poll in polls out of the election. Carlos Pineda is his name. He's a conservative businessman. Who's running this, Joseph? This is taking one of the countries that the U.S. has had healthy relationships, and it's turning it into a non-transparent, non-democracy.
No, this is problematic. I mean, and it's not clear to me exactly why Carlos Pineda, who is the front runner for the Guatemala elections, are going to happen this month on the 20, I think it's the 24th, if I'm not mistaken, of June. And so it wasn't clear to me why he was not allowed to continue his contention for the presidency. It was apparently according to some administrative error that he did when he registered his nomination or his political party. I wasn't entirely clear. But that to me seems like a very small reason for disqualifying the front runner. I mean, one thing if he was in fourth, fifth, sixth place and he was, you know, pretty much out of contention, but he was gaining momentum. And so what it appears to be, and I'm not saying that this is what it is, because I leave it up to the election experts inside Guatemala to project what's the actual reason, the technicality of it. But what it appears, the perception is that they just don't want they don't want to have a fair election. And that's what it looks like on the outside, because the next two leading candidates are both left of center candidates. One is a more radical left. That's Sandra Torres. She's a person that's, you know, was mired in some controversy inside the country because of her basically imposing the anti-corruption effort, which is good, but imposing it in a way to pursue the shutdown of certain civil society groups. And then there's the center-left candidate, Millet, who's considered to be more of a statesman that could be potentially the next president of Guatemala. The next right-of-center candidate, which would be Zuri Ríos, at least from the last poll that I've seen, and this might be updated in the last week or so, but from the last poll that I've seen, she was trailing in fourth, and now she would be third, technically, since they removed the front runner. But she needs some momentum to be able to get to the top of the ballot in terms of to become the next president of Guatemala. Now, Guatemala does have a second round. So, you know, it does look like whoever's going to, whatever happens at the end of this month in terms of the first round, is going to go into a second round. But the question is whether it's going to be, the second round is going to be defined by two leftist candidates, Sandra Torres and Millet, or it's going to be a left-right conundrum if Zuri Ríos can have a last-minute surge. So that's remained to be seen. But, you know, those of us that have been watching kind of like Latin America elections, you know, for a while now, as we talked about before, there's kind of been this leftward shift in the region, but it wasn't just a leftward shift. It was really to the far radical left. And you have people like President Petro in Colombia, President Lula in Brazil, that are really mired in all kinds of controversy just within the first months, days of their presidency. And so we could talk about that in a second. But then we saw the election victory of Santiago Peña in Paraguay, which for some said maybe there's going to be a rightward shift in 2024. Three this year, beginning with Paraguay, and then we were all optimistic about Guatemala in the sense that the front runner was a conservative candidate. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore, but we'll see how things will turn out. I mean, there's still a couple weeks left.
Also in Central America, Nicaragua accuses Catholic Church of money laundering, freezes accounts. Ernesto, Nicaragua, led by Ortega and his family, it's complete darkness visible. There is no transparency whatsoever for what's going on. We just have this headline from Reuters about confiscation of church property. Is that right or left? How is that regarded throughout the region, what Ortega's doing?
It's very ironic that he's persecuting the Catholic Church, first of all, because left-wing Catholic Church, the theology of liberation, started to a large degree in Central America in the 70s and 80s. I mean, it started a little bit before, but became very strong in the 70s and 80s. They were the allies of many left-wing projects across the region. And now Ortega, I mean, they are certainly are criticizing him with reason, and he turned against them. So this is shows what happens when you choose your wrong allies. Anyway, since many years ago, we thought that Nicaragua cannot stay for a long time like this, when Ortega started to oppress his people and destroy the democratic system there. And there they are, but they are following the path opened by Chavez, opened by Evo Morales. They are, just doing what you're supposed to do if you're a dictator now. I mean, you proclaim yourself left-wing and you act like one. You have good allies across the region, you have good allies outside of the region, and you're still in power, and you can close churches and close radios and imprison your opponents. But if you talk about that from the right-wing perspective, like we did in the Bolsonaro government, you are the fascist, you are the authoritarian. So there's a complete misunderstanding about what democracy means in the region.
Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, Joseph Umar, executive director of Secure Free Society. We're headed to Bogota, Colombia. There's a scandal described as a grotesque, quote, abuse of power. This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.